Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? It is December 19th. We are coming to you live from not in the brick house. I'm in my bedroom apartment.
Are there bricks in that house, though?
Nah. I guess outside there might be. Might be bricks outside. There are no bricks here. But there's us, Austin Walker, Patrick Klepek. Danielle is off on a vacation still. Danica is working from home also.
I'm always working from home.
That's where you live. You live and work from home. It's one of those things, right? Like, sometimes you just need to work from home. For me, today, I have to get a lot of things written today between our end of year stuff that I haven't had time to work on and some stuff that for the new year. It turns out one of the jobs of like running a site is that you don't get to focus on the current big project. You have to focus on the next thing. And that, it turns out, is like harder than it might should be, you know?
Yeah. Not without infinite time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How have you been?
Good. It's cold.
Yeah. I heard it got to like cold. Negative something.
Yeah, I was shoveling yesterday. It was 1 degree out, which bizarrely, when it's cold, it's similar to when it's hot. Like, if it's hot and it's humid, it doesn't have to be very warm out in order for it to be miserable. Right. It just gets more miserable as it gets higher in temperature. It's the same thing kind of cold. Like, it was 1 degrees yesterday, and I went and shoveled my driveway for 45 minutes, and, like, it was fine. Like, I actually didn't even wear gloves. But like the moment you'd introduce like any wind into the equation,
it's over. It's done.
Yeah, it's bad. And I got this problem I got to solve in my office at the moment. It's extremely cold.
Is it because of the window?
In my office. It's not a window. It's an electrical outlet that I was going to plug a heater into because I was like, man, my feet are chilly.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, I'll just put this little portable heater in. Like kind of. You know, I shut the door and I can kind of heat up the room if it, you know, kind of goes for 20 minutes. And then as I go to plug it in, I just feel a gust of wind. And I don't know how houses or outlets work despite owning one and have paid a lot of money for it. But if you put your hand, so if you look at the outlet, it is frosted over. There is snow in the house.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's how people die. I've seen Final Destination 1 through 4.
There's 5 of them.
I didn't see the 5th one.
I think the last one was The Final Destination.
That's, oh, yeah. Anyway, maybe. There might be one more, and it might be your house. You have
to
be careful,
it's bad.
Patrick.
So I have to go buy an insulator kit after we record this podcast, because not only is it, like, I spend half my day regulating my temperature, I'm probably losing a profound amount of money.
Yeah, heating.
And it's probably dangerous.
Right, but also money. Also, I'm sure that room should be being heated for less.
And keep in mind, it was frosting over, and I was plugging things into it.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm like, no longer plugging things into it.
At any point, you could have just been got. Like, that would have been it. Oh, what happened to Patrick? Weird story. Check your outlets. Like, you would have been a lesson people taught. That's not good.
I'm not using the outlet. The outlet has.
Chad is losing
something.
It.
I've put something over it to try and contain the heat before I take care of it. But it's bad.
Yeah.
Well, Young Slav in the chat's like, how is there frost on an outlet? Well, because when there is 1 degree weather, like, shooting through it, but then I turn up the heat in this room. I don't think the frost is from outside.
Yeah.
It is the fact that cold air is coming in, and there's condensation.
The frost is coming from inside the house. Exactly.
Yes. I've figured out the horror story that I've been telling myself I'm going to write a short-form horror story for the better part of 15 years. I finally got it.
Finally.
It's when I was going to shove a heater into an outlet, and then I died. It's a compelling story full of drama.
When you weren't almost dying and when you weren't almost freezing, what were you doing this weekend? What are you up to?
I finished The Last Guardian.
Oh, you did.
I am the Last Guardian. Okay. I didn't start it this weekend. I was playing it all last week after I finished Final Fantasy 15, but we just didn't have time to really talk about it. But
what do you think?
The highs of that game are very high, and the lows of that game are very low. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad I played it.
How long did it take you to get through that?
Like maybe 8-10 hours.
Okay. That maybe I'm closer than I thought. I'm trying to decide whether or not I should push through, basically. Like, or do I spend that time going back and beating Doom? Do I spend that time going back and playing Infinite Warfare? This is the thing that's like, it's end of year.
If you're asking me if you should drop The Last Guardian and go play Doom instead, then that is the easiest fucking decision you could make today.
I just wanted the one that's actually been getting me is actually, and this is going to sound familiar, I've been feeling really guilty about not having played The Witcher all the way through, even though that game didn't even come out this year. But as we get to the end of the year, thinking about, like, Blood and Wine and how good that apparently is, and how, like, all the time I'm playing Final Fantasy 15 feels like I could have been playing The Witcher. I got this, like, really bad guilt spell the other night where, even though I was having some fun, I hit a really bad lull in Final Fantasy 15. I got through it. I'm back to liking that game again, but I hit like 5 hours straight where it felt bad, and it felt like I was wasting my fucking time. and that wasn't even the bad. That wasn't even like chapter 13 or whatever. It was just
no.
Like,
then you start questioning a lot of life decisions. Chapter 13.
Yeah. So I'm. And I don't want to. I want to go back to Last Guardian and get your thoughts on it. But I just want to voice this now before I lose it, which is that like, I'm at the point in Final Fantasy 15 where I'm 20-something hours in. I've done a lot of the side stuff. A lot of it hasn't paid off. Like, again and again and again, it didn't pay off.
Yep.
Right?
You mean you're getting tomatoes for the seventh time?
Exactly. I'm getting tomatoes or frogs.
Didn't
or
turn out
beans.
To, like, reveal some deep insight about the farming community in Final Fantasy 15.
Or car parts. And the thing that's frustrating is, like, it might. I might be two side quests away from a big reveal.
No.
No? Okay.
No. 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 And you've played enough of that game that the back half of the game is not like the part where the story kicks in, like none of that is
right.
Like none of it is going to be like, oh, that was worth the 6 hours
of
characterization and bad dialogue from the beginning of the game. Like they really fixed that in the back half. No, like, oh, are the character motivations going to finally get explained?
I had a couple of good moments with Gladio that were really cool. I had a really good Prompto sequence. Like there's some stuff that's okay. That's still being okay.
Yeah.
And I think I got to a dungeon last night that was like, I had to go find Mithril, and it did the frustrating thing of me, like, having Mithril in my inventory already, finding different Mithril things throughout the dungeon, but none of that was the Mithril I needed, I guess. I needed a different piece of Mithril.
Yep.
But that dungeon was actually really cool, and I like the character that you kind of go through it with. But I keep, like, not understanding who these people are in this world.
What's going on?
You know, like,
why sometimes villains are your friends and then they disappear?
I get why there are my friends and disappear because that's how anime works. I get it. That I'm willing to hand wave. The thing I'm not is when I first started playing this game, I made this supposition of like, it feels like there are two worlds. There's like the world of the big empire, the kind of upstairs, downstairs split. And downstairs is middle America in this analogy. And the coasts, the like evil empire over here and the good empire over here, Insomnia, like they're the upper, they're the upstairs part of the upstairs, downstairs drama. And that's why these like rich kids don't understand anything about the rest of the world and they don't dress like anybody else and blah, blah, blah. But the more I think about it, the more I play this game, it feels like there are three sides. And it's like the people who really understand the world and who understand the kind of imperial political intrigue stuff, the war, why it's happening, what the relationships are, who's in charge here and there. Then there's like everybody else in the world who also understands all of that stuff and just like is too busy to give a fuck about it. Like they're not stupid. They understand who the Imperial Chancellor is. They are connected to the Oracle. They have, you know, religious, you know, interests, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like the main characters who spend a lot of time with the Chancellor of the Evil Empire. He tells them his name. He says, oh, it's me. It's me, Arden. My name's Arden. Nice to meet you. He's dressed like the only dude in the world who dresses like that.
Yes.
And then there's like the reveal of him being the Imperial Chancellor. Homie, he was in your hometown 2 weeks ago. He was there while you were there. He's in the newspaper. You have a smartphone. Like, if I met some dude
Austin, this is a game where they learn about the destruction of a city and the death of of Noctis's father, the king, through a news newspaper. They have cell phones, and they find out it through. Like, at least put a line in that says there was an EMP bomb, and can't use your goddamn cell phone.
No, because he gets a phone call. Like, he calls somebody. He's like, "Oh shit, my dad died." Like, someone should have called him. Or the other thing,
I texted him. Send him a snap.
Send him a snap.
A snap. He's like, your dad's dead.
Here's your dead dad back here. Yeah. Like. Got him. Like, that's all. So, and I'm sure it's building to something. I get the feeling that the characters around Noctis understand more about the world than he does. That he's been very pampered and, like, closed off from the world. But it's very frustrating when it's like if Vladimir Putin rolled up and he was like, "Yo, what's up? I'm Vlad. I got this horse. Do you want to, like, go hang out?" And I'm like, "Oh, word. Cool. I know another guy named Vlad, but no connection, I guess." Like, how don't you know? You need to know.
Yeah, the core four group is in that game is interesting. I think it's the end. It is not the deep examination of modern masculinity that maybe we thought that they were going for. But I will say that, like, there is decent emotional payoff for, like, if you ignore all the bad stuff in the story of Final Fantasy XV, which is, like, most of it. Like, it's mostly all bad, unexplained motivations, why events are occurring, or at least they're not given enough context for you to buy why they're occurring. They do, I think, meaningfully pay off, like, the friendship of the four. Like, if anything, like, there's a giant missed opportunity because, like, you know very little of the backstory of these four dudes. Like, I would have loved, like, I don't know, like, prologue chapters or something that were like, why do these four care about each other? Like, you kind of get a little bit of that, like, because you spend, you know, 33 to 35 hours with them and some idle dialogue fills it in, but they probably could have done
You didn't
more
rush out
there.
To watch Brotherhood? That wasn't, you didn't watch the anime backstory?
If I need to watch an anime or a CG movie to understand your game, you fucked up.
I'm just saying, the anime's out there for you. If you really want to, those questions are burning a hole in your skull.
Whatever. This comes from the guy that watched Mobisodes for Lost, so maybe I should not be throwing bricks at this glass house called Final Fantasy 15.
It's great. We all have our vices. We all do.
We do. Austin.
What's up? Hey, hi.
We work for Vice.
Oh, right. Shit, I can't say that anymore. We all have our... I don't know. Do you know? Okay. A thing people don't know is Vice makes ads for other people sometimes. Like, that's a thing. Like, oh, hey, we got super good at making documentaries and shit. We should just make ads. And we have a company that makes our ads for other companies called Virtue, which is, like, extra hilarious to me. It's just like, you have to do it at some point. So I'm tickled by that. So Last Guardian, let's get back to that really quick, because I am very curious about what your overall takeaway was.
Someone said this on Twitter, I can't remember where, that part of your reaction to The Last Guardian will be colored by what kind of pet person you are and what your experience are with animals, which, like, Trico is tough to control, let's say, intentionally so, I think. Like, he is very much meant to be... or a she? I guess I don't know if they gender Trico in the game. Whatever.
No, either.
It Trico. You know what you learn early on is, like, you shouldn't be spamming, you know, actions to Trico. Like, you need to, like, be very deliberate. You need to kind of lean you know, you sometimes get off and, like, run ahead and, like, kind of lead Trico to where it should be going. I also find that's, like, a very convenient way of excusing, like, some very frustrating moments in the game. Like there's a way that both are true. What makes Trico interesting and what are some of those satisfying moments are finding ways to treat him how you actually will treat an animal, to, like, give, like, obvious repetitive instructions in order to accomplish a goal.
Jump. Come on and jump.
And you could also argue that, like, it's very poorly implemented in a lot of places and frustrating to a degree that it shouldn't be.
Right.
Having owned an animal, and the animal I do own looks, like, remarkably like Trico. Mine does not have giant claws or wings, as far as I'm aware. But, like, in a certain light, my Chihuahua looks remarkably like Trico, because Trico looks very cat-like.
Wait, what's the name of your pet?
Pixel.
Oh, I thought you said... Oh, your Chihuahua. I thought you said Machala? Machala looks a lot like
Machala. That sounds like a... That sounds like a slur.
It does.
Something terribly inappropriate right now.
What did Patrick just say? Shit.
Oh, he said, did he just call Austin a Machala?
Jesus Christ.
This. Because if that actually is something terrible, then we're really digging ourselves into a bad hole. Ooh. Somewhere in Urban Dictionary, someone is going to put something there to make us feel
terrible.
But yeah, I like there are moments where like I see myself in my relationship with my own animal that I actually found like myself connecting with the game, and like there's a specific emotional beat later in the game that like I found like I was sitting there, I had my daughter Jessica strapped to my chest because I was trying to calm her down, and I'm playing the game, and I have my mother-in-law walk around the house, and I'm playing this game on a projector where this giant beast is screaming, and then like this tender moment happens, and I find myself like tearing up, and I'm like, how am I going to explain this to anyone in this house? Like, Patrick, what are you doing? Like, oh, I'm just trying to calm my daughter down, I'm playing this video game, and I appear to be crying while this beast is screaming on this.
Sounds like a lot.
An interesting moment.
But like that's the sort of promise that game had made in a sense. So if they're succeeding at it, nice. Good on them, right?
It succeeds enough that I think for people who have really enjoyed Fumito Ueda's work in the past, like you should play it. Like there is enough in here that's like, yeah, but like
Can I tell you where I am and you can tell me how much longer I have?
Uh-huh.
So I got through the big section of all of the bridges where you're pushing stuff, and then I fell really far, and it's this moment of just like, oh, you're back here.
Oh, you got to find food now get them moving again.
Yeah.
You're in the final third.
Okay, that's cool. I'll push through.
I'd say the ending is worth seeing if you've made it that far. Like, it's the ending is really good, but it's pretty low compared, like, I'm ranking the Ueda games. Like,
have you gone back, and played Ico or Shadow lately?
I don't know if I want to.
Yeah.
Like, I replayed Ico before Shadow of the Colossus came out, and I've not played Shadow of the Colossus.
Ico, that means you replayed Ico a decade ago, though, or more.
Given how often I do not replay games, that's pretty decent by my standards.
I'm also someone who doesn't go back and play games that often. There's like a handful of things I'll return to, but for the most part, I am like constantly busy playing new stuff. And I wonder sometimes if I should make more time for old games that I've already beaten and like. Like there's a handful of things I'll return to. Like I'll replay Far Cry 2 every time someone says Far Cry 2. For a while, I would replay Deus Ex 1 whenever anybody said Deus Ex 1. But like I haven't gone back to play lots of games I love.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is the time, and it's not just that like, oh, my time is limited because of like the context of my life now. It's like games are just such a huge time sink. Like I make a point, like, you know, I just saw Rogue One. It's like I made sure to watch Force Awakens and A New Hope because like it's not too hard to find time to like
sit
and squeeze those movies in. Yeah. I can do other things. You know, I can have that on in the background while I'm like doing laundry or taking care of my daughter.
Right.
Like, whereas with games require such a deep amount of concentration. I'm with you. I think I don't fully like. I am someone that, you know, likes to enjoy the context and have the refresher of the context before the new thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get to do that with games because the way they're structured just prevents me from doing that. That's compounded by my own life limitations. But like games themselves do not lend themselves very easily to being able to like enjoy the proper context. Like, you know, if a new Mega Man comes out, you know, you're not going to find the time to like go through the entire history in the same way that you could like more reasonably watch like, I don't know, every Marvel film before the new one comes out.
Totally.
And that bums me out because I think you glean something from having that context.
Of course you do. Yeah.
Like I would have liked to have played Deus Ex 1 before Mankind Divided came out because I think that would probably say something interesting about where that series has come from that I can't speak
to
because... Yeah.
You know, it's tough. It's a thing that I find myself talking to people who don't cover games a lot to try to explain to them this added just time sink element of them. It's just like to be able to say something meaningful about The Last Guardian means putting in 8 hours. To be able to say something meaningful about Westworld means to put in a couple to watch a few episodes. And that doesn't mean that like our job is innately harder or something. It just means it's like, oh no, I need to schedule into my life another 8 hours to get through this thing. And that's not, or longer, right? It's one of the reasons why I really am thankful that there are Let's Plays and things like that. And both video and text, actually. I was writing about a game, Suda51's Flower, Sun, and Rain once, and I was so thankful that someone had done a text based LP of it where all of the dialogue was written, because it was like, it's searchable. Like, I can go through and search through this thing and find this specific moment I was looking for, in which there's this really good moment in which you're playing and you meet this kid who, Flower Sun and Rain is like the weirdest game. It's so good, but it's also not a thing I could ever recommend because it's torture to play. You're really slow. It's a mess. But there's this moment where this kid is like, listen, mister, like, you think you're like this hotshot good guy, but also the second you stop talking to us, you think that we disappear. And it's like this really good moment of, especially because, like, I think they retranslated it such on the DS release to be about closing the world down. And it's like, oh, right, like, here's this kid who's like talking shit about me, the player, who's like constantly complaining about all these weirdos around him, but also doesn't give a fuck about them really because they're made up characters in my mind. Right. Really good. Flower, Sun, and Rain, don't miss it. Hot recommendation, 2016.
Speaking of Suda 51,
yeah,
I'm getting more and more curious about this weird Let It Die game.
You should play Let It Die. I should play Silver Case. There are two Suda 51 games that released in the last.
Yeah, there was a remake that just came out on Steam and PS4 and Vita, I think.
Yeah, so Silver Case was the game that came out before. Flower, Sun, and Rain is the sequel to Silver Case. We only got Flower, Sun, and Rain.
What? Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. And apparently it's so weird and like surreal because Silver Case was so depressing to make. And he wanted to like lighten it up a little bit. So now I really got to go play that. But you should definitely play Let It Die. I put a few hours into Let It Die. It's fucking weird.
I want to meet Uncle Death. That's really all I want to do.
I need you to meet Uncle Death. Before you finish your Game of the Year stuff, you should at least meet Uncle Death.
Yeah. Well, 2016 feels like it's just been a long lead up to meeting Uncle Death anyway.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I'll tell you how my Thanksgiving went after we're done. great. It's good. Whew. Anyway.
Everyone's got an awkward Uncle Death.
Everyone's got an Uncle Death in their lives, you know? It's just how you deal with your Uncle Death. I think actually life would be a lot better if we all had a real Uncle Death in our lives, because he's great. So what else is going on, Patrick? You get up to anything else besides Last Guardian? You saw Rogue One?
I saw Rogue One. It's good.
Should I see it?
Yeah, you should see it. I played Rez for the first time in VR.
Oh, I thought you meant for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, no, yeah, pretty much for the first. Like, I've played a level, but, like, I've never,
you've
like,
never played Rez.
Played Rez before.
That's an interesting perspective. So what
I've
you
owned
it.
I've owned it multiple times because it's one of those, like, I should own that game.
Yeah, you should.
I'll get around to
did
it.
Did you play the whole thing in VR?
I played up through, I died at the, what seemed like the end of Area 5 during the boss sequence.
That's sad. That's a good fucking level.
Yeah. I would say it's tough to play a game like that with the way people talk about it.
Yes.
You know, it's like when you go and play a game that is not just considered a classic by some, but like a spiritual life-changing experience by the way that some people I know talk about that game, it's incredibly difficult to then play it and like you can't sit down for something and go like, I'm ready to have my life changed. And it's just like an unreasonable expectation to put on any kind of media. Like that happens more passively than actively, especially if you're anticipating it. So I had to go, you know, try to go in with an open mind of like, this is probably going to be disappointing, but not disappointing because it's Rez's fault.
Right.
Like, and I do like it. Like it especially in VR. Like you know, if you've never played it before, like. If you've thought about downloading it, like, wait until you can try and play it in VR. Like, if you're going to play it for the first time, period, like, the VR, like, is a really incredible way to experience the visuals. But it really wasn't until literally Area 5 that, like, it sort of clicked for, like, oh, this is why people find it as impressive. Like, Area 5 is, like, on its own. Like, Areas 1 through 4, they're fine. I was mostly got through them and went, like, that was a pretty decent, pretty... a shooter. Like, I also am not super into like EDM and trance music, so like a little bit that is lost on me. Whereas like Area 5 like tells a story, and like has just some really incredible, overwhelming visuals that are responsible for why I died. Like, I, you know, Rez is not a particularly difficult game, but Area 5 is actually where like the first time they introduced challenge and where the visuals are actually sort of like an impediment to your ability to like properly play in a way that's like really fascinating and heightened
by
VR.
It's super weird in VR because like on one hand it's I think VR is way easier because of how quickly you can track enemies. You're just like, da 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 da, and everyone is locked on and just dead. It's so much quicker than the analog stick. But also, the barrage of information coming into your head is so hard to keep a handle on because it's so much. It's so overwhelming, which I think speaks to what they intended with the game to begin with. And it's why it works so well in VR. Like, one of the things about Rez was this, like, cyberpunk transhumanist, like, you were being, the world is a world of information and it can be overwhelming, and the hacker who you are has to delve into these spaces that are just like so filled with color and light and sound and shape, and they often go together in cool ways, but sometimes it can be a lot to take in. And so doing that in VR just like feels right in a way that, even though it can be overwhelming, the overwhelmingness isn't just like, oh, it's hard to keep track of these enemies. It's like, oh shit, what's that over there? Uh-oh, whoops, I'm getting shot now. And that's that's a cool type of difficulty to have.
Yeah, it makes me wish, and obviously the area they added to this Area X is probably, like, I want another one of these, but, like, made in 2016, right? Like, so, wait, like, you know,
Rez
is...
Did you play Area X?
No, you have to finish 5 in order to... I died at the end of 5, so I need to...
And you should check, because... So I talked to Mark McDonald about it. I think if you put an hour into that game, you just get Area X.
So, all right, so maybe I'll do some of, like, the other modes.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to see the end of Area 5. Also, Area 5 is also, like, pretty long relative to the other ones. Like, I didn't try it a second time because I was like, oh, that actually felt like 10 minutes as opposed to the other ones, which are – you kind of, like, blink and the stages are over. But in VR, that mechanic of, like, looking around and locking on works so incredibly well. Like, man, I you know, I don't know if we're just, you know, Rez 2 is probably a bad idea, which is why they made Child of Eden instead.
Right.
Which may have also been a bad idea.
I want to, like, take you by your lapels and shake you. Play Area X. Like,
okay.
They introduced the thing that's like, oh, this is what the next step is.
That was kind of what I got the impression of when I was scrolling through the trophies list, and, like, 3/4 of the trophies are all dedicated to Area X, which made me think, I think the game I want is probably just, like, 5 areas of Area X, which I don't know yet because I haven't played it yet, but that was my hunch.
Saying these words are making me want to, like, go hook up my PSVR and play Area X again because it's that good, and it's, like, it's that good.
So, okay, all right, I will try. I will do that this week.
Still haven't used my PSVR with a pro to see if there's differences in games that, like, made me sick, so I need to spend some time.
And Rez is one of the games
no,
that
no,
got...
No, 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 Rez never made me sick.
Oh, well, I was going to say, Rez has got a specific boost from PlayStation Pro, where I think it, like, down samples from, like, 1440p or something like that.
It's
like,
it does some weird things, like, listen, it outputs at the same end thing, but we render it higher first, and then we bring it down, so the quality level is still higher.
This is like a moment where I wish I had Brad Shoemaker to explain it to us.
But,
my understanding is, you render higher natively and then bring it down, and it makes it sharper, and it partially makes up for the fact that the PlayStation VR screen isn't as nice as the Oculus and Vive. Though I presume that a Rez will show up on Steam at some point too.
I hope so. I don't think Sony published it or anything, so.
No, I'm pretty sure it was, like, a licensing deal with Enhanced Games, and Rez was one of, like, Batman VR and Resident Evil that have, like, you know, some sort of exclusivity deal with Sony.
All right, cool. That's I'm sorry. I'm not just thinking about Rez Area X.
Yeah, that's fair. See, you're one of those people. I want to be one of those people. I need to go to Area X.
We need to take you to Area X, Patrick. We need to bring you in.
No. Stop it, Trump. Don't take me to Area X.
No. So what else? Where else are we at? What time is it? I need to look at the time. I need to figure
out. It's 25. We don't have, like, a stop, but we have work to do, so we have a stop.
Right, but, you know, I want to make sure people get their us, you know? So the second thing, I guess, the two other things I want to talk about, which are...
I've been talking about my games. What are you up?
I can't talk about... So I played some more Mario Run, which
okay.
Like, I've gotten all of the black coins in the first two worlds. I can't.
Yep.
I'm not going to go forward until I get them all as I move forward. Mm-hmm. So that's just going to be the thing that happens. The thing that I actually want to talk about, though, was not about a game I played. It was that more Switch info came out from a leak to Eurogamer today.
It was a long, long history of really, really good reporting both on the Switch and just technical stuff in general.
In general, Eurogamer has consistently been a group of people who I go to be like, okay, wait, so what's it mean that this thing has this chip? I don't, what's a teraflop again?
We should have asked them what downsampling means.
Totally, exactly. so they made a report today that basically confirmed that they confirmed the CPU and GPU clock speeds, basically how powerful and fast the Switch is. But then also the thing that was kind of issues that was up in the air, one of the things that was contentious was, will the Switch be more powerful in the dock or not? Is that thing just about power? Is it just about charge? Like, hey, you can plug it in to charge it and put it on the TV.
Right.
Or would there be processing power in it? Or would it be a thing, because a thing that happens too that I think is not super wide knowledge, is that sometimes a processor will get overclocked if it has direct access to a consistent power source. I know that, like, MacBooks do that. Like, if you're plugged in, your MacBook will run faster in certain instances than if it was just a laptop in laptop mode, mm-hmm. or whatever. And so they confirmed, or they didn't confirm, they're reporting that, according to their sources, that if you remove the dock, or if you remove the Switch from its dock, it kind of loses like 2.5% of its power. And in general, it's kind of GPU speed, basically. It goes from 768 megahertz in the dock to 307.2 out of the dock. And I don't want to get into like numbers or whatever, but I do think that it's interesting to start thinking about this as a thing that those two experiences seem like they'd be pretty different. And I'm curious what you think about that, and if this lines up with what you've been hearing, or in general, what your thoughts have been about this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I had heard around the time that they did the formal reveal of the Switch that there was going to be people had noticed in the trailer, they're like, oh, it seems like maybe the game doesn't look as good when they're taking it off the Switch. And that had been, I talked to folks that had had meetings with Nintendo, and they said Nintendo was still figuring out what the balance was, mm-hmm. on that. It's my guess is Eurogamer, they have to be locking that down so developers can start optimizing their games. Like, most devs don't have dev kits at this point, but that stuff starts.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Starting to happen, and what they're looking for is, like, if you what Nintendo was struggling with, or not necessarily struggling with, but trying to balance, was this idea of, like, it's portable, but if you only can use it for 20 minutes, what's the point of it being portable?
Right.
And so the reason you clock this stuff down, the reason you make it less powerful, is because that is going in tandem with them trying to increase battery life to be, I don't know what their measure is going to be. I don't know if it's like, oh, it can survive a cross-country flight. I think what the number we were hearing was like early 3DS life, which the right. 3DS, the early 3DS could not survive like a cross-country flight. You were looking at, 3-4 hours probably.
Which is wild to think about in retrospect.
Like, yeah.
Phew, okay.
My guess is that's a lot of their consideration is, you can run this at a slower clock speed because they're probably going to bump the resolution down on the device. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if, it's not, straight up 720p, when you're walking around with it. Like, maybe it, dumps down into a different resolution. But, yeah, it lines up with what I've heard. I how much of an impact that has, I don't know. It's probably going to depend on the developer. I don't think it's going to mean you go from, 60 frames a second in Breath of the Wild to 30 frames a mm-hmm. second, but it's going to have an impact. But the question is, the other ways of us playing games like that are like, well, if, think about how remote play works.
Right.
Like, on remote play, you're dealing with stuttering and network connection issues. And like, I did Destiny loot grinds when I was like just hanging out at like hotels on my Vita. It's like, this isn't great. But, like, at least I can go shop, what's that dude, the dude that you buy the rare loot from, the shopkeeper?
Yeah.
What was that guy's name? Cameron, whatever that guy's name was. Like, I would log in and do that. So if that's, like, the low end.
Zur?
Like, yeah.
Zur.
Zur, X-U-R. That. Yeah. If that's the low end, then, like, this is, like, a better version of that. It's like, okay, so Breath of the Wild's not going to look as good, but, like, you're going to be able to play it. Right. It's going to be playable, and like you can take it on the bus with you or something like that. So I don't know. It's tough because all of it's speculation right now. Like, we're going to know a lot more in a couple of weeks when they formally let folks like yourself touch it, and then they go on their tour.
I very much like. I do as long as I, you know. I'm for my part not looking for it to be a powerhouse to begin with. Like, it's just not what I've come to Nintendo consoles for. I can imagine being bummed if you were someone who wanted this to be like, all right, Nintendo's stepping up to the plate, and they're gonna finally compete head on with Sony and Microsoft again. And I'll get to buy my Nintendo console, and that will be where I get to play all of the new games I want to play. I get that that's like a real choice for some people, where it's like, I have money for a console and to buy games for a console. Like, that's it. I don't get to have a PS4 and a Switch. Like, I'm not going to be able to afford that. So I get that is stressful. We're not stressful, but just like, that's a choice you have to make.
Yeah.
But also, like, I am totally also okay with that being not necessarily my Nintendo machine, but like the thing I would love for it to become is to maybe go back to, I'd love for it to be the place where, like, the sorts of games that were coming out on the kind of PS4 in the early few years of the PS4, the early, like, year and a half of the Adam Boys era, Nick Suttner era of like, lots of third-party outreach to small independent studios, or not even necessarily independent, but, like, small project games. Because things like Shovel Knight, like, don't necessarily need a ton of power to be good, both in the dock and in portable mode, right? So I would love for it to become the Vita 2 in that. I know I'm sending it to its grave by saying that.
That's
but I
bad.
Would love for it to be that sort of machine that has those sorts of games on it that are fantastic for when I take it away. And then when I come home, I can dock it and be like, all right, I want to see Breath of the Wild in 1080p or whatever it is on my TV and like bright color and all of that. Also, I just have a long commute. Like, it's a thing where right now my commute is 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, depending on buses and other shit, and or a strict like 1 hour if I just get on the train and go the long way around. And I'm always just trying to decide which way I do it. If I had like if I had Zelda, it would be pretty easy for me to convince myself to just do the long way. So we'll see. And also, I'm curious if I would play the Switch on a train. That's a thing I'm actually curious about. Because like Vita, I'll play on a train. Would I play the Switch knowing that the whole thing is like the console? And if I lost it, it would be bad because I just wouldn't, it would be my whole console would be gone. You know what I mean?
I guess, but like, you know, you use your phone and your phone's gonna be more expensive than the Switch.
I hold my whole phone. It's here it is. Got it. I don't know. We'll see.
And also I never, you know, I certainly feel for folks that, you know, if the Switch is gonna be their primary console, like I understand the, you know, not getting all the latest and greatest third-party games that run at, like, you know, the best technical specs. But, like, you know, look at Super Mario 3D World. Like the Nintendo doesn't
those games
need
look great. Yeah.
That game looks fine. It looks perfect. Yeah. Like, I don't need, like, Nintendo's advances are not going to come through, like, additional memory and like, they use that stuff in interesting ways. Like, you know, a game like Breath of the Wild is a game that can't exist without additional processing power. But, like, the vast majority of the games they make, like, essentially, if the Switch is just, like, they're making sure they can run, like, Wii U quality, like, aesthetic games, but they can look really nice when you take them off the dock.
On the 720 screen, yeah.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, totally.
And they also play the long game, right? Like, they make lower-cost hardware so that if they have a blunder like the Wii U, like, it doesn't kill the company.
Right.
You know, like they make sure that they are always compromising in the ways that play the long tail, that they get another shot.
This is the like the interesting double movement of Nintendo. It's always that like, oh, they're a super conservative company in that they adapt widely, already adapted technology slowly. They sometimes feels like they're like 3 years behind the curve on things like internet or you know, like I have no idea how to, I need to get a friend code from you if I want to compare Super Mario run scores.
Right.
Quick correction, someone by the way did email in to let us know that Game Center is still in iOS. It's just not its own app. It's just built. And then Nintendo just said, we're not going to use that. Just friend codes.
That also makes total sense.
Yep, again, right. Like, they didn't adapt that. But also, Nintendo's also cutting edge and like, fuck it. We're going to try our own weird shit. And that is part of why they're so frustrating, but also part of why they're so amazing. Like, so I'm super curious about the Switch at this point. I feel not the hype building necessarily, but a year ago, when we all basically knew what this thing was, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds all right. But, like, here we are a couple of months out, and I'm like, okay, like, can I imagine this entering people's lives? Maybe not the way that we did, where, like, so many people picked up a Wii and had fun with their parents and blah, blah, blah. But, like, something closer to the way Kindles did, where it's like, oh, right, like, Kindles, I see Kindles everywhere now. I see people playing Kindles or reading on Kindles constantly. And for the first, like, 6 months, it was like, oh, weird, that person has an ebook. And now it's just like, oh, right, there are ebooks everywhere. And
yeah.
If they think they play their cards really well, Nintendo has the chance to make portable gaming on dedicated gaming devices really popular again. I think in the States, obviously this is different in different parts of the world. But like, while they're doubling down on their mobile stuff, doing this thing that's like, also we're going to build a dedicated portable gaming machine feels like a chance at that happening again. I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind like going onto a subway and seeing five people playing Zelda. That would be a pretty cool thing.
Nintendo's output the last, let's say, 2 years or so has been pretty low on a software level side. So like, what gets me excited is like, throughout the, you know, whatever happens financially with the Switch is that, like, we're going to end, you know, the 3DS is going to continue being a thing. Like, mm-hmm. It is, especially post Pokemon Go Pokemon Sun and Moon, like, 3DS is doing really well from all accounts. It sounds like they sold all their holiday stock already,
right?
Because they were expecting 3DS sales to go down, and then Pokemon has really spiked everything for them, which is, again, that's indicative of Nintendo's hyper-conservative attitude.
Yep.
For better or worse. But the idea that, like, in the next, like, over the next couple of years, like, we're going to get the combined powers of their handheld divisions, their console divisions, all making games for a brand new platform at the same time, while right. They've also been sitting on stuff. Like, I just, you know, maybe we convince ourselves of this every time Nintendo launches a new platform, because I feel like I've said this before, yep. Which is like, nope, this is going to be the one where, like, they have awesome games all the time instead of, like, every 6 to 12 months. But it does seem like if we're, you know, we're due for a new Mario, we're due for a new Zelda, like, Retro's working on something, like, there's could be a lot of really exciting, like, Nintendo games, like, really, really soon. Like, as soon, like, March is not that far.
Right.
Like, I could be playing a brand new 3D Mario game of the year 2017, in March. And that's exciting.
I don't think they're not going to launch with a Mario game, Patrick. They're going to launch with Zelda, right? Like, they're not going to...
No, they've already basically said that's not happening.
Oh, okay.
The rumor is that it's getting delayed till summer.
Oh,
so.
That's a shame. Well, maybe it'll be Mario. Who knows?
Game of the year, Mario. Game of the year 2017, please.
Is it that's the actual? That's what they're naming it.
Yeah, whereas other companies just say, we're going to wait till it comes out, get the critical acclaim, and release the Game of the Year edition. Nintendo is just straight up saying, look, come on, Game of the Year 2017, starring Mario.
Yeah, that's totally possible. But we'll see that, Patrick. I'll let you have this dream. I'll let you hold it in your heart. I'm not here to step on your dreams and your
Please
aspirations
don't.
For Nintendo.
Please don't.
Not your own.
Please don't.
I'll step on your own. But I'm
that's
I won't,
fine.
I
that's,
won't step
that's your
on
job.
Your goals for Nintendo. We'll see what they do themselves. I think it's time to go over to the old question bucket and dip our hands in.
I think the question bucket might be behind that outlet in my office.
Oh no.
I think the bucket might be leaking into my house.
Oh, all right, here's a good one. This is a fresh one coming in just a couple days ago from Franklin Sizemore. I'm going to pick a few from the top of the bucket. It's Monday, so that's what I like to do. If you want your questions to be in the bucket, where should people send them, Patrick?
GamingAdvice.com.
Got
Title,
it.
Title,
uh-huh.
Questions.
Questions. Questions to GamingAdvice.com. Exactly. This one comes in from Franklin, who says, hello, humans. If Duke Nukem Forever were more successful, would a game like Duke Jr., Duke's embarrassed teenage son, be possible? Thanks, Franklin Sizemore. Yes, you could say that name if you choose. Also, I can't... Franklin Sizemore's
Franklin.
Avatar is just an intense close-up on a face. Just like top lip up to brow. It's a lot to look at. So yeah, Duke Jr., what do you think, Patrick? Only the best questions from the question.
Yeah, like, you know, I've never been asked, you know, we could ask some tough questions about, like, social, economic, moral issues podcast. But, like, what I'm saying is, like, I've never been asked something as difficult as imagining a world where Duke Nukem Forever was a success. I don't know. Yeah, if they made another one of those, they would have made a, if that had done well, they would have made a sequel, and it would have bummed me out because that was a bad game.
Duke is coming back, Patrick. Come on.
Well, did they already release their? Well, like it seems like they're laying the groundwork. Like between this Duke Nukem, what was it, expansion pack they did for the original Duke Nukem 3D, Gearbox is involved in this weird $60 HD re-release of Bulletstorm, which like I liked Bulletstorm, but like paying $60 for that game when it came out last gen seems a little weird. But they're also including Duke as a character in that, in which they re-recorded lines for the entire game.
Yep.
Where he just replaces, like, they make some sort of canonical version of, which in some ways I think is kind of hilarious and awesome, except that it's Duke.
Except that it's Duke, and, like, the entire, okay, whenever I hear anybody defend Bulletstorm, whenever I hear anybody talk about how much they like Bulletstorm, not defend it.
Lots of people, like playing
Lots of people love Bulletstorm. They really do. And lots of people who I respect, like you, like Cameron Kunzelman loves Bulletstorm, a columnist at Waypoint. A lot of people who I from all walks of life, from like the highest minded critics to like the average the muckety mucks, right? No, that's not what, to like regular folks who are just like, oh yeah, I spent $60 on that game and I was happy with it, right? Have defended their love of Bulletstorm in the face of
Austin Walker,
of me, who like thought it was okay. I think it's okay. You shoot a lot of quote unquote savages in that game is all I'm saying. The thing that worked for me and that seems to have worked for a lot of those other people.
Tiny bit of shade.
Yeah, a little bit. there's almost a self parody of the genre there, right? Which in some senses is what Duke Nukem 3D had been when it first came out, was like this, like, hilarious version of Commando and just like Schwarzenegger, Stallone, and 80s action heroes, pushed to the brink, pushed to like the point of complete absurdity,
and the advent of like interactivity in 3D spaces,
right.
brought to, again, an absurd, like, where like it was genuinely kind of cool that you could like start a sink and pee in a urinal, like, because like you just couldn't do that stuff in games.
It's
before.
Also hilarious because like the character from Scorpion is basically pissing, right? Like, haha, this action hero is like, and there's the, that level of like interactivity, mundanity mixed with guy who's like just quoting Ash from Evil Dead is like, okay, I'm smirking at that.
Yeah.
But when that game came back out, like, no, like there's no touchstone for that. That's not what action heroes are like at this point. You know, you would need to be a lot more like a Jason Statham character. You'd need to be a lot more like a Vin Diesel character. And those characters are already themselves weird deconstructions of 80s action heroes, right? Like they're already aware in a way that a lot of those movies were not. And so to have Duke now come into Bulletstorm, which felt like a parody of bad action game characters already feels like, no, you're just doubling down on the thing this game was already making fun of.
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe they'll be really well written and they'll be very funny, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't need any more Duke Nuke. Like, I just don't. And he's not a character worth reinventing either. Right. Yeah. That's what like worries me about that. Like, is this all leading towards the revival of Duke Nukem, the modernization of Duke Nukem for 2016, like, there's just, come on, man, there's, like, way better creative pursuits than trying to find a way to shove. Duke Nukem was funny because of the time period he existed in. Yeah. He did not have some Dietrich cultural reverence that needs to be reinterpreted in 2016. We got John Wick 2. We don't need you, Duke Nukem. We got John Wick.
And he's in a game already. He's in Payday.
Is he really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
If you get Payday right now, Payday, have you looked at the Payday DLC lately?
No.
Payday 2.
Is there a lot of it?
Oh my god, dude.
I'm just thinking about this John Wick 2 trailer I haven't watched yet.
Yeah, we should go watch that. That sounds good. Payday 2 has every character there is in it. They're just in that game now. So like,
DLC?
All the character DLC.
$500.
It's like Smash Brothers, but for robbing people at this point. Like, so it started early on in that they were like, oh, we're going to do a crossover with Hotline Miami. I was like, yeah, okay. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. John Wick is in this game. Like, the John Wick.
Keanu Reeves? Like,
it's his face.
Them?
Yeah. They scanned his.
Okay.
They took his face off and then put it on a character inside of Payday 2. He has his own, like, talent tree. He has his own, like, level-up tree. Ron Perlman is in this game, basically playing his character from Sons of Anarchy.
What?
Yeah. There is a Point Break heist. So the new Point Break, there's the Point Break characters are in that game. There is, who just got added? Someone else just got added. There's a Scarface character pack, I guess.
Why?
You know, sometimes you want to be a Scarface.
There's no through line in, like, any of those character
choices.
You
don't want to get together. You don't want, like, Jacket from Hotline Miami teaming up with Al Pacino? Is that not what you want to do? I don't know if it's actually Al Pacino.
Well,
I haven't actually looked
there
at
is
this.
Something yeah. like there, okay, I will say there's the kind of deeply appealing about that matchup, but if
yes.
it feels like they just grabbed the, like someone was like, I don't know, the Point Break people were like, "Oh, they'll take it."
Yep. I think it's Scarface. I'm going to hit play on this trailer. I think it's the Scarface. It says Scarface TM.
Oh, the dark gritty Scarface reboot.
But he has
Scarface.
He has a mask on.
Just like in the movie.
Yeah.
It was all cocaine. Like it was a cocaine mask.
Oh, one of his guns is called the Little Friend, of course. Okay. Mm. I'm closing the screen. Bye. Mm,
stop it.
But yeah, so I don't, how did I even get to Payday? John Wick is in Payday. I don't need the Duke Nukem. 2016, we lost David Bowie. We lost Prince.
We can lose Duke Nukem.
We lost
Adam to
Leonard
the file.
Cohen. We can lose Duke Nukem.
Sorry, John St. John.
He's doing other stuff. He said some... I don't know. This is not digging into John St. John shit. Who knows? I'm going to do one more question for the question bucket. I think we got time for one more hot question here. Let's see. Let's find one I really like here. I don't think either of us are really qualified to digging into hot Pokemon mechanics right now.
Nope.
So there's two questions here that I'm going to combine into one question. One comes in from Matt. Thanks, Matt. One comes in from Mick. Mick writes, I've been thinking about, hey, waypointers. I like there's a variation on whether we're waypointers. Some people call us wayfarers. I like that. Hey, waypointers. Okay. I've been thinking a bit about recent and upcoming releases, and I realize I'm facing a crisis of open world fatigue. I noticed that you guys, and Austin in particular, have been diving into all of these open worlds and have managed to avoid that feeling, or at least haven't mentioned it yourselves. Do you have any tips on how to get over the fact that a lot of these open world games end up feeling like they play too similarly? Also, my favorite open world series is the Yakuza series. It's just the best. Thanks for the podcasts. Love you guys. Keep it up. And then Matt, combining these two questions into one, says, in this day and age of open world, just one more turn and lose track of time games, do you keep track of hours played or use in-game timers to decide either when you should take a break from the game for a while or when it's time to abandon side quests and finish the main story? So, kind of two sides of the same coin. On one hand, it's like the general meta. Are we getting bored of open world games? Is there open world fatigue? How do you deal with that? And two, when you are playing one of these games, how do you manage it so that you don't burn out on a specific one?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's... there are a lot of these games, and I think also open world used to be a genre, and now open world is becoming sort of like a feature, right? So it's like Metal Gear Solid 5, like maybe not what we would usually call an open world game, but like was totally an open world game, like had a big open sprawling world that you could explore and systemic things were going on, but it's different than the kind of systemic open world that's happening in like a Watch Dogs 2 where it's like simulating a city and things that are happening. So it's like we're losing the plot on open world because that is starting to mean a lot of different things. But I think he's specifically talking about the, you know, like especially like the Ubisoft games of the world, the Mafia 3. I'm definitely like I just finished, you know, Final Fantasy 15. Part of the reason I wanted to play Last Guardian and Rez was because like that's something completely different. Like I find it like really important to have like palate cleansing games, like stuff that is just like I'm about to start playing The Walking Dead season 3. Like that is as different as you get from these games. But when I do play them, I essentially like I dabble in the side stuff, and I just there's like a intangible point that I hit with any of these games where, and I hit it with Final Fantasy 15 at the moment that I realized the side quests were pointless. Mm-hmm. Like that was the moment where I was like, okay, like basically I'll mine the things around the edges of the story to the point that it's either just going to be a grind to find collectibles. Like there is no real meaning other than just like, you know, if it is literally just seeing a number go up
then
so
like,
I can get a trophy, then that is not, I do not get much meaning out of that. Like, unless it's the rare instance where like I've talked about collectibles and like Mario games where I feel like they're deployed
going after them is kind of the own reward, right? Like the reason you're playing is because it's fun to go after them.
Right, yeah, like the journey to that collectible is fun, whereas like often in these open world games, like, you know, like I'm playing, I'm dipping back into Mafia 3 because I really want to try and know a little more of that story before we do our end of the year stuff. Like collecting like the Playboy magazines like doesn't lead me to anywhere interesting. They just are they literally just opened up a map and just like dumped them, you know? And so like I'll find them as I come across them naturally, but I'm never going to go out of my way. And like I'll hit a tipping point in Mafia 3 where it's like, you know, oh, I'm hacking into these, or I guess not hacking, but you know, you're breaking into
freaking,
these
because it's a phone line, freaking.
Yeah,
P-H-R-E-A-K-I-N-G.
And at some point, that'll cease being interesting or cease being something I'm doing naturally as along with the story, and then I'll just stop doing it, and then I'll just move along. Like it's very rare that I find any of these games interesting enough to
100% them.
To 100% them. Like it's not just a time thing. I just don't think they give good justifications for why you even should.
Yeah. So I feel like for me, it's a lot of there's definitely a tipping point with almost all of these games where it's like, I'll start with like wanting to be a completionist about them, and then along the way we'll figure out what I want to be a completionist about. So like in Mafia 3, it was like I wanted to make sure that I got certain I upgraded my like my capos or whatever to a certain level so that I would get the unlocks that I wanted from them. And so I did enough side stuff to get that stuff. And then I was like, I can get a little bit more. I could get an extra thing from that person. I just don't really care enough about that thing, so I'm done. So I try to and this can be an answer to, like, how do you not burn out on these games? Which is like set yourself small goals, achieve those goals, and move on. The other answer for like how do I not burn out on small or how do I get over my open world fatigue is like, it's okay to not play open world games. Like I happen to really like them and will defend my own enjoyment of them, but I'm not here to like evangelize to you about why you should come to the church of the open world, right? Like I'm a motherfucker.
Don't feel bad if you don't want to play a game.
Totally. Like my blog. Not,
like there's so many games to play these days.
Exactly.
Like
you have endless stuff to play. I've always been someone who loves games like this. Like, and that is a quality of me. And what I want to do is shine a light on where those things are doing something that I think is interesting or productive or is pushing the medium into something cool. When I told that story about the Mafia 3 scene in which you kind of like have to like do a hit on this judge, I think that it played out in a way that's like, oh, here's a reminder of how open worlds can help us do interesting storytelling beats. But it's not like, and that's why linear games are bad. It's why when I write about why I'm not as big of a fan of the Uncharted games as many people, it's not me saying like, you're all wrong about liking that thing. It's me trying to unravel why it is I don't like a thing. So if you feel burnt out on open world games right now, like, go play Rez, go play, you know, a bunch of other cool linear stuff. Or if you know like, oh, what I really want is a Yakuza game, like, try to figure out why it is those games you respond well to. Find other games that have those sorts of traits in them. So is it the goofiness that Yakuza has, and so many of the open world games that are available are kind of grim and shitty? Like, fuck them. Is it because it has really cool mini games? Find open world games that have cool mini games. You know, find things that match what you look for. Or just, like, hang out until there's a new Yakuza game. Yakuza 0 comes out fairly soon.
Yeah.
January?
Sometime next month.
Yeah. So, like, you got one of those coming up. Play that, and like,
I'm gonna play that.
Me too. I'm excited about it.
I've never played a Yakuza, but I like watching videos of Yakuza games on YouTube. And
Yakuza is funny.
I want to make those my videos.
It's a cool fucking. The series is good. I've played, I think, every game in the series. I haven't completed every game in the series. I've completed a few of them, and really, really like it. I'm really actually excited for Yakuza Kiwami.
Is that the actual proper sequel?
No, it's the remake of one that's coming out.
Oh, okay.
That came out a couple of years ago or something, but it's a remake with new new assets. They actually just made it new, and they added a bunch of new side stuff, new main stuff. They kind of have restructured. There's a character in the first Yakuza game, and I love how he shows up. I think he's a main character in Zero also. And in the first Yakuza game, you just like go to the batting cages to go like get some information from him, and he's the guy with the eye patch. He's like in a bunch of these Yakuza games now. And in the first game, he's like kind of a throwaway character. It's like you go there and have a fight with him, and like it's a fun, like there's a heated rivalry there, but that's just kind of gestured to. And in Kiwami, it seems like that's going to be heightened in a big way. Like they've made I looked at a press release for this or a preview, and they talked about how, like, he's just going to be in the game all over the place, keeping an eye on you at all times, including, like, from manhole covers. And it's like, all right, good. Like, let's just have this dude be, like, goofy-ass version of Nemesis, who's just chasing me down all game. That sounds incredible. I really have a fondness for the first Yakuza game. I think it's a tight game compared to what some of the other ones were, which were a little bit more sprawling. And so I've wanted there to be a good jumping on point for this series for people for a long time.
Like, I want to fight tigers. I want to fight tigers with my fists.
You can fight tigers with your fists. You can fight gangsters. You can fight. There's an underground arena. Like, it's, I say it's a tighter game, but also the first Yakuza game is everything from, like, back alley brawls to, like, nationwide conspiracies and
good,
like, weird hierarchies from secret Yakuza clan. Like, it's great. It's so good and funny and weird. And is what I wanted. It's why I'm not excited about Shenmue 3. Is like, yeah, we got it. Like, Yakuza can catch it up. Like, we didn't. I'm not missing out. Someone else figured out how to keep making those games. It was Sega. Sega kept doing it. Sega kept making.
I was gonna say,
games.
Yeah.
Like, that's it's called Yakuza. So that's my suggestion for how not to burn out on open world games.
Yeah, like, take that, Shenmue fans.
Yeah, if you like Shenmue games, like, that's. Sorry, like, I actually really like Shenmue in concept and think it's was daring. I think it was a daring game that I liked. And now I could never go. I've watched two different groups of people play through Shenmue in the last year. I've watched it twice this year. It does not hold up. Shenmue,
Duke Nukem. Get the fuck
out. His name is Mr. Shenmue, thank you. His name
added you to the pile of 2016. Mr. Shenmue, see yourself out.
His name is Good Boy Ryo. I think that's his technical. What's his the real name? All right, Patrick. I think that's going to bring episode 23 of Waypoint Radio to a close.
Ooh.
I think we got there. We did it. We figured out how to get through another episode. It's the end of the year. It's going to be a super busy week for us.
Yeah.
We're prepping for next week's end of the year content. Look forward to that content. Hashtag content. Where can people find you on the internet, Patrick?
Find me. P Clubbing on Facebook and at Patrick Clubbing on Twitter.
It's a good place to find. I guess
somewhere around Waypoint. I guess I don't know.
Waypoint.vice.com. Waypoint.zone. You could go to DigitalPyramids.com.
I could.
You could go to Bazinga.zone.
Good.
There's probably more out there too. I don't know. I haven't looked. At
Shenmue.zone.
Shenmue.zone could take you to. Don't go to Shenmue Zone. The Shenmue Zone is a bad place. No. Don't let them trick you into going there.
That's where all the Shenmue fans have been for, like, the last 20 years. It's kind of like the negative zone. It's a bad place.
God. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker, on Facebook at Austin Walker Games. You can find us as a unit as Waypoint at twitter.com/Waypoint, on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. You can find us on YouTube at Waypoint Vice, I believe. You can listen to us on this show, the one that you're hearing in your ears right now, obviously on iTunes, on Android or Google Play Store. Tell your friends, tell people about it. Please give us a like or a favorite or a give us 5 stars and a review.
There's stars on there. Yeah.
That would be good. That's a useful thing to give us. Shout outs to Tim Barnes, who is not engineering this, but is going to produce it later. So thank you, Tim. And shout outs to Bowen, who is playing the song that you're either listening to right now or about to listen to. Miss You off of his EP Pale Machine. You can find out more about Bowen at waypoint.zone/Bowen, B-O-E-N. I think that's going to do it for us today, Patrick. I will see you all of you on Friday.
You're pointing at me again.
Including you, all right. Patrick.
All right.
I'll see you in the future. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.